Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's going on, people? Welcome to the Howls and Drows podcast. Yes, we are back with a different name, same podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting, from the Howls and Drows Timberwolves newsletter. And as usual, we're partnered up with Canis Hoopers to revamp and re-immerse ourselves in this Timberwolves podcast world. Today, we're going to be looking at some things we're excited about, some things we're nervous about, and some things we expect to see as the Timberwolves season kind of speeds closer and closer. To do that with me is an old friend of the podcast, the leader of the Canis Hoopers Wolfpack, Jack Borman. Jack, what is happening, my man? Thank you for coming back on the pod.
So good to see you, man. Oh, my goodness. Everything's been good here, man. Counting down the days until we get some real Timberwolves basketball and I don't have to theorize what the Northern Heights, the Target Centers, whatever Kyle says the nickname is that I'm going with.
What is your preference?
I don't know. I just name? Whatever that's whatever important. Kyle tells me it is whatever it is. I think he's big on Target Centers now, so I think we're gonna go with Target Centers.
All right. We'll lock in Target Centers then for the podcast.
Yeah. So we'll have to see. But he's the leader of the band on that.
Yeah, as I said, we're going to kind of do some questions, I guess, predictions. There's not much else to talk about, as I said to you off air before the season. You know, we obviously had media day and we've had a week of training camp, but still we're kind of in the weeds when it comes to this team and what to expect. So we're going to do a little bit of projecting forward and some things that I guess we're excited to see, or some things that we're worried about for the season, some players that we're worried about or some players that we're excited about. We'll get straight into it. The first thing I asked you was, you know, what do you think is going to be the most, I guess, exciting thing of the season? What's the part of this team that you're most excited about?
Yeah, man. So I know that this was something that just like really intrigued me last year, watching the Timberwolves, was just the growth of Cat as a driver. He really became ultimately the second most efficient or the third most efficient, depending on how you look at it, big man driver in the NBA behind only Giannis, of course. And if you want to classify Pascal Siakam as a big, Cat probably ranked behind him too. And so I'm really curious to see how that's going to evolve with Gobert on the floor. And the thing with Cat is that, you know, hopefully he'd be covered by some smaller fours, bigger guys, I guess, that are pretty good in space. You'd think like a Jonathan Isaac type guy or a Tobias Harris type guy or someone like that. It's just a much bigger body that can slide their feet a little bit. And so I'm just really curious to see if Carl's going to have the space to drive because people are going to be helping on Rudy, if it's going to be a situation where, you know, Carl's just going to wait for the defense to get into rotation before trying to attack off the dribble and stuff like that. Cause we saw Cat make some really, really interesting, wraparound passes, he kind of jump underneath the basket and just fire, one hand rockets to the opposite slot. So I'm just really curious to see, is that something that Cat's going to get away from and is going to look to, try and post more guys up, or just because he'd probably be guarded by smaller guys, or you know, are we just going to see him kind of be relegated more to a shooter while Rudy's on the floor, and then kind of play that, you know, top of the key position that he played, you know, as a five man with someone like Anthony Edwards on the floor? Because I think we're going to see the two of them on the floor a lot this year, which is what we heard from Mike Anori in practice on Thursday. So I'm just really excited to see what Cat's offensive game will look like, because it was really incredibly diverse in terms of how he attacked last year and was arguably the league's most versatile scorer last season.
Yeah, it's a good point, and it does bring up, I guess, it's almost a worry as well as an excitement for me, is that how much of that diversity gets stripped away from Cat with Gobert on the floor, and I think it comes from not only Gobert being huge, and that's different to, I know everyone will point to the Jared Vanderbilt point that they do play similar kind of games, Vanderbilt and Gobert, but Gobert is massive to begin with, and he's also involved in the offense a lot more as a screener, whereas Vando kind of lived in that dunker spot. Sometimes Vando would even come, you know, start in the corner, and because he's so athletic and so energetic, he could make, you know, slice cuts and 45 cuts to be that dive man or that rim running kind of, you know, cutter. Gobert's not going to do that. He's probably going to hang out more in the dunker spot. He is very smart in the dunker spot. He kind of moves around, you know, in line with the driver to get out of their way and to shield the driver. I'm excited to see Towns driving and then Gobert coming in and just laying a block, you know, on the rim protector, and he does that a lot. It's almost like an off-ball illegal screen at the ring, and it works. I've watched almost every single basket made by the Jazz over the last few weeks for the whole season. And Gobert just gets in the way all the time. Yeah,
and in a good way.
Sometimes that's a good... Sometimes it's a bad thing where he's kind of in the way, but most of the time it's a good thing because he's in the way of the defender. And Towns will now be facing, I think, more one-on-one driving attempts at the ring. And
yeah.
That's really important.
Being in the way is a little bit different when it's Mike Conley or Donovan Mitchell, you know, 2 6-foot guards versus, you know, a 7 or a 6'10", you know, unicorn-type player. And so I was at practice on Thursday and I asked Mike Anori pretty much exactly what I said I was excited about. I said, you know, Cat was one of the most efficient drivers last season, yada, yada. You know, how do you think his driving game will evolve one way or the other with Gobert out there? And Micah said, you know, it's still going to be huge. And he said one thing he really likes about Rudy is that, you know, guys take the dunker spot as being disrespectful. You know, it's like you're being relegated to the dunker spot, but that Rudy really sees the value in it and really loves being the guy to drive the value in the dunker spot. And so
I love that. I love that quote. That's such a good, because he like, you can tell by watching that he enjoys the minutiae of the dunker spot, which is, it's a lot more, you know, expanded than just standing near the ring and being a fucking nuisance, you know, to guys who are trying to drive. Like he lives there and kind of thrives in that area.
Yeah. And so, you know, I wasn't like directly quoting Micah, just kind of dumbing it down a little bit. You know, and he said that Cat's going to have to rely a lot on, you know, making some shots early in the game so that he can, you know, attack closeouts and get guys up in the air. And he feels really confident that what the two of those guys are on the floor, and then you don't even factor in, you know, how explosive Ant is off the dribble. And, you know, we haven't even seen what Jaden looks like, right? You know, off the dribble with his supposedly improved handle and explosiveness. So Micah, you know, basically just said there's going to be so many different guys that can attack the rim. And, you know, ultimately, you know, if Cat's going to be able to make shots, everything's going to be open for him. The rim's going to be open all the time because guys are going to have to choose one way or the other. Do I want to step into the lane and try and defend Cat and make him make that pass or make that little floater, layup, dunk, whatever? You know, Micah just praised Cat for being so unselfish and always being a willing passer. And like I said, praising Rudy for wanting to own that dunker spot. So, yeah, so I think it's just going to be a really interesting thing to see how they develop, how that chemistry develops with the two of them, especially since Cat has still not practiced with the team yet. He's been dealing with an illness. I was at media day on Monday. He was not present for media day, obviously. And missed all week of practice. I don't know if he was there today or not. It was closed to media. So, you know, we'll see. There's an open practice tomorrow, Saturday here that I won't be at, but we'll see if that would be an interesting day for Cat to kind of make his debut, so to speak.
Yeah, I think with Cat, we're probably likely to see, I think obviously, probably less points per game, but if they're easier points per game and that everything, you know, there's not so many drives where he has to, you know, push off three defenders to get to the rim and, you know, there's not so much grinding and drafting for every bucket. And even on a Timberwolves team that was really good on offense last season and, you know, really diverse compared to other seasons that Towns has been in the system, he still had to draft for a lot of buckets because there just wasn't really a guy out there taking a lot of pressure off him. And Gobert's not an elite scorer by any means, but he takes pressure off guys just naturally and just by being out there and being huge. And I think that's going to be really important for Towns. I think if you're looking at it from a box score perspective or you don't watch the Timberwolves all that often, you might feel like he's had a little bit less of an offensive impact with Gobert out there and just with more, you know, with Ant going into his third season and probably getting a little bit more time on the ball and, you know, more shots per game, maybe you might feel like Towns is doing less, but I expect him to be doing more and doing it more efficiently, you know, and that's really an indicator of the ceiling for this team. I think if you can get Towns to just do less work, like, that's a good thing. And on defense, too, where he's probably going to have to do more work this season, it's a good balance to kind of take some of that load off him offensively.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me either if, you know, you start fucking around on NBA in the NBA stats portal and, like, you're looking at, okay, who are the true shooting percentage leaders among guys who are taking 12 shots a game? Like, it would not surprise me if Gobert is number one and, you know, Cat is, like, fourth or third and yeah. Steph is yeah. second
and still Giannis averaging like 23 a game or something.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think the other thing we're going to see with this team too, just to super quick, is like, I think it's totally going to vary night to night. Like, the thing is the Wolves last year really had to establish Cat in every single game, right? Regardless mm-hmm. of who they're playing. And this next year, like, I just don't think they're going to have to do that every single game. Obviously it's going to be a priority. Yes. You know, it's just going to be kind of an ebb and flow thing based on the matchups, which is really cool that the Wolves have the personnel to do that.
Yeah, I think so. And that I think ties into the thing I'm excited about, which is, I think we've kind of been discussing it already, is the offense with Gobert in it. And I just feel like, I know I've said it multiple times already because I'm so excited about it, but I just think that his size is still underrated. Like, he's fucking massive, man. Like, I think that's seen as a hindrance sometimes on offense, but his ability to use that size to leverage his teammates into more advantageous positions, I think is easily his best skill. From watching all those, you know, baskets and stuff that I was talking about before from the Jazz last season, I just feel like him being there creates so much. It's going to turn this Wolves offense into a buzzsaw, man. Like, I'm working on a video about it. I know you wrote about it. And I think the phrase that you mentioned, which defines his dominance, and I think is a really good kind of way to put it, is that he's just like an every play player. And like, even when he's not in the action, people don't want to leave him. They don't switch off him. They don't help off him. He's a fantastic on-ball screener, as we know, and roll man, which is the obvious part of his game. But his off-ball screening, which is kind of what I'm working on for this video, is just immense. His pin downs are impossible to get around. All of a sudden, you've got a guy, you know, curling around a pin down who gets the pass. The helper has to come in and, you know, help on them. And then the helper's helping the helper. And all of a sudden, the whole defensive shell is, like, crumbled. Because Gobert set a pin down screen, the most, you know, probably the second most common screen in basketball. And just his size, and it really just, yeah, it crumbles everything for the defense. And then, you know, he's setting back screens on guys, and the same thing's happening. Helpers have to help, and helpers have to help the helper. And it's I don't think we can fully understand it because we haven't seen it in Minnesota yet. But I think that when, you know, the first preseason game, we're going to get 10 clips where the Wolves offense is like impossible to guard because Rudy Gobert set one off ball screen and everyone else just kind of fell into line.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got a big closing out on Anthony Edwards because they had to switch and he's dusting them off a drive. Or you've got a small closing out on Karl Anthony Towns, and that leads into your point earlier that now Kat's driving on a 6'3" guy who's closing out to try and stop his jumper. And all of a sudden the Wolves are on 140 points and, you know,
and there's 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
I just think it's more than defense. I'm way more excited about Gobert's offense than his defense.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's just a goddamn shame that Malik Beasley had to get traded.
He is so perfect for Gobert. Like Jordan Clarkson is a good kind of, you know, facsimile the way he moves up without the ball, and Clarkson just feasted with Gobert.
Yeah, dude, I already know I'm gonna miss, even starting on Tuesday night, just the all caps "show me something bees" or "talk to me bees" tweets. I miss it already,
and I'm a known bees hater as well. I know he's gonna feel missed.
Hopefully some time in Utah will help him, but yeah, dude, like I think what I'm most excited for, like, Gobert is an off-ball screener, like, isn't even necessarily for shooters. It's more for, like, you know, curl, like, just really curling hard around a screen and showing in a sense that, like, you know, you could have Jade in the corner, right? And he sets, Gobert sets a pin-down screen and Jaden curls off of it. And then, you know, okay, Jaden could be wide open. He could not be. And if he's not, then you can get right into, you know, just a wide pick and roll, you know, right in the slot there. And then, who the hell knows what happens? Or, you know, you could then have Gobert just turn around and set a flare screen. You know, like you could have kind of an odd thing going where, like, Kat's setting a strong side ball screen, for D'Lo. And Gobert's setting, you know, a strong side pin down for McDaniels. McDaniels curls, and then, you know, Gobert sets a flare screen for Kat or something like that. Like, there's just going to be so many variations that they can work off of just with that one specific thing. And I think what's going to be really cool is just to see the way that the Wolves offensive players evolve as cutters off of that, just because I think that Gobert can just totally bend and destroy a defense with his dives, with his screens, you know, whatever it is, just his sheer presence, you know, within 15 feet of the basket.
But everyone has to take advantage of that. It only works at its best when other guys see the defenders helping to stop Rudy and make their own move, like you said, a cut, or even just, you know, like kind of spacing out from the corner to the top of the arc and finding a place to shoot from, like that. That's what he does, but you have to be smart about it. I think Edwards will have to get better at that. McDaniels is pretty good at that kind of stuff, kind of that, you know, intrinsic moving. But I think Edwards and D'Lo probably will have to, you know, find ways that they can take advantage of how much space Gobert is going to give
them.
And
this may sound odd and kind of fly in the face of common, like, logic, but I think D'Lo, honestly, might be more valuable off the ball when Gobert is in the game than he could be on ball, solely for the sense that, like, the Wolves sneakily don't have a ton of really, really high-level spot-up shooting.
Not even sneakily.
Like,
I think it's like
kind of a
problem.
Wild card. Like Noel. I mean, Noel. Obviously, like, you know me. Like, I'm the world's biggest Jalen Noel fan. But, like, you know, I mean, if he's not another guy who's going to be, you know, 38-39% in spot up situations, like, D'Lo is really going to have to you know, step up in that regard. And he did really, really well in Golden State. You hope that Ant is ready to take another step with his on the ball duties, but I think that you know, if some guys struggle to shoot the ball out of the gate, like that's going to be a really, really important swing skill for the Timberwolves, is just how much D'Lo is willing to shoot and kind of float around the perimeter like he's done so well over the course of his career, and just how well he's going to be able to do it.
And I think on that point, that ties into how well can Anthony Edwards run an offense, including playmaking. Because if D'Lo is going to be the guy off the ball, then Ant's going to be the guy probably on the ball. And we know what he can do on the ball when he's attacking for himself. But if you're going to heap responsibility onto D'Angelo Russell to be an off-ball shooter, then you have to heap the same amount of responsibility on Anthony Edwards to find him in the spots that he's going to get, inevitably, with Gobert and with Towns out there setting off-ball screens as well. Like, he's not a great screener, but he's still, you know, a big dude who knows how to set screens and has done it his whole life. So it's Edwards, you know, flinging passes out of the pick and roll to the corners, kind of, you know, running sets where he can leverage Gobert's off-ball screens and make the right pass is something that Utah did really well. Like, obviously, Bogdanovich is very good at it. Joe Ingles was very good at it. Even Clarkson, who is the definition of a ball hog, was still pretty good at it. Like, but, you know, Edwards has a bit of that ball hog mentality, which can be awesome. And a lot of the times is awesome.
In the playoffs, it was pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah. But on a team where there's so many weapons, he needs to be the one kind of pulling the trigger at times rather than the bullet itself.
100%. 100%. I couldn't agree with that more. And I think, like, you know, it really will be interesting to see, like, how much the game has slowed down for Ant in year three. You'd mm-hmm. think that a lot of the reads on the floor are going to be so much easier just because there's so many threats on the floor with Ant at the same time. And even, you know, if they're not high-level threats, it's just, you know, like a Torian Prince or a Kyle Anderson, they're obviously not guys that, like, the defense is going to lose sleep about the night before, but really smart veteran players that know where to be, know how to play off of guys, and should hopefully make Ant's life easy no matter who he's sharing the floor out there with. So,
yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with some of the things we are worried about, and then we'll evolve from there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, we are back, and now I want to talk about some things that we are worried about for the season. We've kind of, you know, blasted the optimism out the speakers at the moment, but how about some pessimism? And I think I'll start here. I'm worried about what happens to the defense when Jaden McDaniels either is in foul trouble or, you know, he's getting cooked, which doesn't happen very often, but it does happen to every great perimeter defender. I'm worried that the narrative that is, you know, the Timberwolves will be better than the Jazz on defense, or that Gobert will have to do less on defense because they have much better perimeter defenders, I'm worried that that might start to deteriorate as the season wears on, because I'm worried about Anthony Edwards having to be this team's second best perimeter defender for 82 games. I'm worried about what happens when they hunt, you know, on-ball matchups that aren't McDaniels, when they hunt D'Lo or they hunt Cat. Like, I know you've got Kyle Anderson in there, who I think is great on ball and will play a lot of minutes. But the cupboards are bare compared to last season. Like, Pat Bev, obviously a great perimeter defender. Jared Vanderbilt, a great perimeter defender. And those two took a lot of heat off McDaniels, especially when McDaniels was really in a funk for fouling-wise, you know. I don't know. I don't want to get to a point where Rudy is having to clean up all these messes again, because that's what kind of led to the downfall, I think, of him in Utah. Not the downfall, but the issues and the messiness that arose in Utah. And I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I think, you know, spoiler alert, I think the Wolves are going to be really, really good. So I don't foresee this becoming like this overarching problem that destroys the season, but I do think that it's a worry. It's the first thing I think of, probably along with the three-point shooting, that worries me, is just what happens when McDaniels isn't out there or isn't having a great night defensively.
When you sent me the list of things for me to prepare for this, this was the first one that I answered, even though it's second sequentially. I wrote, one thing I'm worried about, Anthony Edwards' buy-in on defense.
Yeah.
You know, Anthony Edwards yesterday, again, this was a question that I asked Ant yesterday at practice. And, you know, basically my question to him was, you know, do you think that you'll take more responsibility for making sure that the intensity level and the, you know, overall efficacy level of the defense is going to drop without Pat Bev and Vando? And he said, and I quote, "I still talk to him every day, so PB gives me all the tips I need. I'm going to take them and run with them and try and instill them in my guys." So he didn't really, I don't want to say dodge a question, but like
he's an expert at dodging a question by just saying just a really vibing, fun,
you know,
answer.
Like, yeah.
So, he's just all vibes, no answers.
Yeah. So he, you know, for reference, like Jace asked a follow-up, like, is Pat Bev going to hound you in the preseason? Ant goes, quote, "I don't know, man. I ain't worried about him, if that's what you was wondering. He should be worried about me." And like, it's just Ant, man. Like, yeah, dude, like, we've all seen the Luka clip. You know, we've all watched the Luka clip about 100 times of them playing in, like, March or April or whatever it was down in Dallas, and Ant just absolutely destroys Luka for like 18 seconds of a possession. And it's just going to be like, how much of that are we going to see every night? Ant said that, you know, another question that I asked Ant was, he was talking a lot about how he feels more explosive. He feels healthier. He cut out fried foods, this summer, at least during the week. And, you know, and I said, okay, so like, obviously you had this knee injury last year. Is, you know, is that something that you think is going to be a problem now after, you know, having such a laborious, intense summer and all that? And he said, he basically said no, like that he did a lot of leg workouts so his hamstrings could be stronger. You know, everything that goes into his knee could be stronger. And so hopefully that we'll see some more like lateral quickness. But for Ant, it's really,
I think it's between the ears.
Yeah,
though.
For sure.
Not,
like,
I don't
I
think it's
say,
anything
like,
to do with physicality.
It's just a matter of how much he wants to do it. And he said, like, he's going to be guarding the best player most nights. Like, that was something that Ant said, you know, and the way that he said it made it sound like it was something that, you know, Finch and the coaching staff has told him. Like, it wasn't just a, like, oh, I want the guy. Ant said, I'm going to be guarding, you know, the best player. And every team. So what he said was, basically he was asked, like, are you ticked? You weren't all defense last year. He said, no, I didn't do that much last year every game, but this year I should be like on the best player the majority of the time. So if I don't make an all defensive team this year, I'll be salty. So again, it's framed towards like an award and whatever, but like if he wants to buy in on defense for 60 nights a year and then every night in the playoffs,
that's fine.
They're gonna be great, but I just think that number is gonna be closer to 30 than 60.
Yeah, and too many teams have multiple guys who can punish you, and Jaden McDaniels will, I think it's going to be quickly, you know, head of the scouting report against Minnesota, that whoever's guarding Jaden McDaniels, if you can spare a possession or two or 10 or 15 where McDaniels' opponent doesn't touch the ball or can be used as a decoy, that's going to be really important, because if you can just put Anthony Edwards in actions and, like, action after action, like, screen, re-screen, you know, make him fight through four screens in a possession, make him stay attached to the hip of a guy who can score at all three levels and who can make plays off the dribble for others, that's a much different proposition to being the guy who comes and plays help defense and as a low man and who can kind of prowl for off-ball steals and for transition opportunities. Like, Anthony Edwards, I think, really thrived in that role last season, where if you do what you are supposed to do, you might get a steal and a dunk. Now it's like, if you do what you're supposed to do, you might still get a mid-range shot, you know, hit on your head. Like, you might not get that instant gratification for your on-ball defense, but in the big scheme and what it's going to do over 100 possessions a night or 75 possessions a night, and what it's going to do for your teammates, what it's going to do for Gobert, who doesn't have to clean up all the messes, and for McDaniels, who doesn't have to spend all night trying to switch, you know, onto more favorable matchups for the team, it's massive. And like you said, I'm worried that he doesn't have the maturity more than anything, you know, because he is a young guy, and these things do come with time, and he's also expending a lot of energy being a 25 and night scorer. So I don't think it's a huge knock on Ant to say he might not just have the wherewithal to put 100% on into both ends on every possession, because not a lot of players do. But, you know, I think this team seriously has, you know, championship or Western Conference Finals aspirations, and you need two great perimeter defenders in your starting five if you're going to reach that level. And right now they have one and an every night question mark, probably.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, too, you know, Ant talked about, too, how he thinks he's going to be able to go for more steers this year, knowing that he has Gobert behind him, which I guess is fine. You know, you'd expect that. But I think it'll be one of the more interesting storylines of the season to start out, is whether or not, you know, we're going to see Ant take that on-ball primary matchup, or if we're going to see that be Jaden McDaniels.
I don't see why it wouldn't be McDaniels. Like, if you have the preference, it's going to be McDaniels, I feel like. I don't know, like, I don't really see the logic behind Finch. I mean, maybe the first eight games where they play OKC and Spurs and, you know, a bunch of teams they should beat easily, maybe that's the time to give Ant a free rein at, I don't even know who is there, Josh Giddey or Lou Dort or someone, you know, like, that's the time where you can just let him run wild as the best point of attack defender. But when it comes to Luka or Kawhi, well, Clippers are a hard one because they have two guys, which is the problem. But, you know, if it comes to Luka is the prime example where they have one great ball handler, I don't think you'll see Ant guarding Luka from the first tip.
I don't know. Luka's like one where I would rather have Ant just because he's so physical. But
yeah, Luka, yeah, like Luka's this pudgy little dude who pushes guys around.
Yeah, he's insane. Yeah, man, I really am just going to be fascinated to see, can Ant have a dominant two-way game somewhat consistently?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it doesn't have to be every night. It just has to be when it matters most. And it can't be every second night. It needs to be, you know, three nights a week. Four nights a week.
I think the best way to describe it is it needs to happen on the nights where that's what a winning recipe calls for. Like, mm-hmm. You could play a team that as, you know, perimeter oriented in terms of, you know, they don't have a ton of really, really good guards, but they're, you know, better in the front court, for instance. Like, if they're playing like Miami, for instance, like and it's not just because this is the first game of the preseason, but, you know, like, I think you could be totally fine just like having Ant like half-ass guard Tyler Hero and be fine. You know? Or, you know, if you're playing, I don't know, like the Suns and have Ant guard Chris Paul.
Yeah. But you can't have him guard Jaylen Brown.
Right.
Well, you know, like, or Paul George.
For sure. Like,
those teams that have two dominant wings.
When you're playing those teams that are really perimeter-oriented in terms of, like, how they get their points and their scoring, or I shouldn't even say perimeter, I should just say, like, guard-oriented. Yeah, like, Boston is a great one. You know, a team like, I don't know, like an Indiana with Halliburton and Buddy Hield, or Portland, or, you know, I don't know, like New Orleans would be an interesting one too to think about.
Yeah, well, he's going to have to guard CJ or Ingram.
Right.
Like, that's kind of, they're your options. So, you know, you have to win, like, you have to at least, you can't get dominated. CJ can't score 45, you know, on end. Like, those nights can't happen because they put too much pressure on McDaniels. They put too much pressure on Rudy and Kat and everyone else who has to start trying to clean up mistakes. And most of those guys aren't guys who can clean up mistakes. You know,
sure.
Rudy's the only one who's good at that. So, yeah. Was that your worry as well?
Yeah,
was that
pretty much.
Kind of, you know, would we tie into
yep.
it? All right. Well, let's keep it moving then. What player, specific, you know, player, not team, are you most excited about this season? Or do you think will exceed expectations?
It's a player who, when they first signed here, I didn't like it at all. And that's Kyle Anderson.
Right. You didn't like the Kyle Anderson. You might be the only person I've ever heard say that.
You want to know why? Because every single time the Grizzlies, like during the Grizzlies series, Kyle Anderson came in the game, I was like, hell yeah, Kyle Anderson's in the game. Like the Wolves, like yeah. His plus minus.
It was Kyle Anderson and Steven Adams, which felt like the Wolves were going
to win. For sure. Like his plus minus in that series had to be like minus like 40 or worse. Unless he was like on the floor for some of those huge, huge runs in game, you know, three or game five. But yeah, I mean, my thing with Kyle Anderson is I think he's such a unique offensive player that fits so well with what the Wolves want to do, in the sense that the Wolves want to play free and want to play this unscripted style of basketball where everybody's just playing off of each other and it's really unselfish and guys are moving with and without the basketball, trying to make it easier on each other. And this is something that Anderson talked about. Like he could see and tell that that was how the Wolves like to play, and that Finch trusted all of his guys to go out and make plays. And that was something that really enticed him about coming to Minnesota. And I feel like a lot of people, you know, more of their expectations lie with Kyle Anderson on the defensive end, which I think is great. I think Kyle Anderson could still have a massive role, and I still think the Wolves could get away with potentially rolling out a five out there that has like Anderson, D'Lo, Ant, Cat, and Gobert and being fine, because Anderson can take guys off the dribble. He can play in the post. He can run the offense. He can play in screen and roll both as a ball handler and as a screener, you know, really good in Chicago actions, you know, faking handoffs and going, all that type of stuff. So I think he's just going to play such a big offensive role, especially in the playoffs, given all of his background with, you know, playing for Pop and then, you know, playing off of guys like Desmond Bane and Ja Morant and just, you know, having a lot of plays where, you know, the defense is so loaded up on trying to stop Cat, trying to stop Ant. That there's just going to be plenty of times where he can just kind of pick his spots, attack off the dribble and get a layup just to relieve some pressure off of those guys in high leverage moments, that I think is going to be really cool. And I think we'll see Kyle Anderson play, you know, all five different positions, at least offensively this season, which is something that I'm kind of excited to see play out. Just because I think you could make an argument that Kyle Anderson could be their fifth or sixth most important player come playoff time. And
I think for sure,
you know, and I think that's a pretty exciting proposition given his background and, you know, given who the five guys above him are.
You want to go back to what we were speaking about before. And if you want to use D'Angelo Russell as an off ball shooter, probably the best way to do it is to take Jaden McDaniels out of the lineup and replace him with Kyle Anderson, and now you've got Kyle Anderson as your ball handler, and you don't have to put that responsibility on Anthony Edwards, because he's a legitimate point guard-ish player. Like, he can run an offense, and that if he can run an offense, now you've got multiple ball handlers who are inclined to playmaking along with Russell. So I think I fully agree with your point that Kyle Anderson is a guy. I almost had him out of this overachieved bracket, but I think that's just because in my head I'm so confident that he's going to be really good and exactly what they need on both ends. Like, he's just, like, the perfect glue guy
and
knows his role, which is just so important on a team like
this. And I think it could be more, like, fan expectations, too. Like, what does the general public think is going to happen? And I think, you know, I just think Kyle Anderson's offensive role is going to be more important than people anticipate it being.
Yeah. He's going to be a guy who immediately becomes a fan favorite.
Yeah. Like, and I, you know,
he's going to,
and just him speaking in media too, like, just totally gets it. And, you know, one of the things that I asked him, on Thursday, he was the third guy that was available. So it was Micah, Ant, and Kyle. And, you know, the Timberwolves last year, you know, really came out of the gates with this confidence and swagger and, you know, kind of attitude that they were better than everybody else and they were going to hit you in the face and, you know, just kind of play super aggressively on both ends of the floor. And Anderson that said that was kind of attractive in that, like, it kind of had a similar Memphis type edge in that, like, and just that, like, you know, they really played together and believed in one another. And as they continued to play better, it only came out more and more and more. And so I asked him kind of how is that swag looked in camp. And, you know, he said that it was something that he could really feel, and that, you know, a lot of different guys, you know, a lot of different guys were talking shit in practice. You know, that they're, you know, just being really loud and energetic and cheering for one another. And that's something that's just going to be really important for this team to rely on, because they don't have a Patrick Beverley anymore. They don't have a Jared Vanderbilt anymore. And
you don't have that rah-rah anymore, but you have, like, this old head. I think Torian Prince is in there too, where it's like this sage kind of old dude who, and old is a bit rude because neither of them are actually old, but I mean, I think I'm the same age almost as Torian Prince, so I shouldn't be calling him old, but, you know, it's not this, I don't think they're going to be the team that punches you in the mouth anymore, but they might be the team that, like, beats you to death with body blows.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's fun. Like, I think the energy is going to be huge. Like, you know, how the Wolves, I mean, Target Center was loud as hell last year.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, a body blow, you know, for instance, could be way more impactful just because of the crowd energy that comes as a result of
this
it.
This team just wants to see, like, punches thrown. They don't care if it's, you know, in the mouth or in the body. Like, this team was starved of punches at all.
For sure.
This fan base, I should say.
And what was funny was, so Jace again piggybacked off my question at the end of the interview, kind of like he did with Ant, kind of once business was concluded, I guess, if you will. And Jace is great at these types of questions. So he goes, more swagger, Minnesota or Memphis? And Kyle Anderson just starts, has this huge smile and immediately just goes, Minnesota, baby. Yes, sir, Minnesota. And everybody was just kind of talking afterwards, saying, like, oh, man, I hope that doesn't get clipped for his sake. Like, but, yeah, so I'm super excited.
Oh, John Morant would have made at least 8 tweets about that.
Yeah, I'm still not over him making up that thing about he and Ant not having an embrace in the that was,
yeah,
that was just terrible. But yeah, man, super excited to see Kyle Anderson. What did you have for that one?
So I have a guy who I think is probably the 10th man on most people's, you know, depth chart, and that's Jordan McLaughlin, man. Like, pace, baby. That is, like, I think you have, you know exactly what you need on a team that has D'Angelo Russell, Kyle Anderson, who's literally fucking named Slow-Mo, and even Karl-Anthony Towns and Ant, who are both kind of more methodical, is some pace, man. Like, the Wolves were in transition 2.7% more often when McLaughlin was on the floor last season, which is 95th percentile, and they scored 8.5 points per 100 transition plays more with him on the floor, and that's 83rd percentile. Like, he just plays with pace, and not even just transition. Like, those are transition numbers, but every pick and roll is done with pace. Every possession is you know, he's at the 3-point line with 18 on the clock or 21 on the clock. Every pass is quick and, you know, zipping around the perimeter. The ball just hops when he's on the floor. And I use D'Lo and Slow-Mo and Cat and Ant as examples, not because they are guys who ruin pace or you can't play with pace with, but I think McLaughlin, as a backup point guard, as a guy who's going to play, say, 15 to 17 minutes a night max, is the perfect sea change from this team that is kind of built to wear teams down with methodical play and with half-court possessions. All of a sudden, you get McLaughlin out there with Ant, or you get McLaughlin out there with Jalen Noel, who can move in transition and who loves to attack off the dribble. I think there's no way, if we're talking about backup point guard position, I think there's no way that Austin Rivers or Bryn Forbes or any of those players take his position this season. Chris Finch loves him. We know Chris 100%. Finch loves.
I think he's going to have a role.
He's like Chris Finch's brain in a little bearded bald man. You know, like he is the guy that does. He's not the straw that stirs the drink because he's not.
He is
as
the
important.
Drink.
And he's
he's
not,
the straw.
He is
and
the drink.
The drink.
He, yeah. Like he is just he's. I think he's such an important piece to the puzzle, especially the bench puzzle, and a real, you know, cable tie for the whole team that kind of keeps things together and also introduces a new element to the team. And it's just that I think it's something they don't have, and on a team that is aspiring to win a lot of games, having one player that does something that no one else does, even if it's just run fast or, you know, like play with that upbeat energy, I think it's really important. And I think it's exceeding expectations, because I believe a lot of people might think that maybe Austin Rivers takes that spot at some point, or maybe, you know, Bryn Forbes slots in as a shooter instead of a pure point guard. But I think Jordan McLaughlin will be a staple of the rotation in every game and playoffs.
I completely agree. And he's not scared of a damn thing. I mean, he came in...
And he plays with that chip on his shoulder. He knows that he could lose his spot at any time.
For sure. And last year, like in the playoffs, I was so impressed with Jordan McLaughlin. I mean, Jordan McLaughlin was good enough to be an impactful rotation player, even when his three-pointers weren't falling. But once he started to make some of those open threes in the playoffs, like, I don't know if you want to look it up really quick, what he shot from three in the playoffs, man, but it felt like every single time he was wide open, he just had zero hesitation to shoot a three. And it felt like more often than not that it went in. And that really unlocked a different element of the Wolves offense, just because he's so quick getting downhill and does such a good job of creating corner threes for guys. Like, I don't know that, you know, in terms of like a per minute basis, I don't think anybody in the league creates more corner threes than Jordan McLaughlin. And if there are people that do, it's got to be a very, very, like, he's got to be in the 98th percentile minimum in that, which is great. And it's going to be a huge point of emphasis for the Timberwolves this year, just because, you know, with having Gobert and the dunker being able to kind of collapse the defense and suck guys in from the corners, that's going to be a really important part of the floor for the Timberwolves. And Jordan McLaughlin does an excellent job of finding it. And he competes his tail off defensively too. So he probably, you could make an argument that he could be the seventh man of this team.
Yeah, you know, it would not surprise, I think Chris Finch probably has that argument with himself.
It would not surprise me if we saw Kyle Anderson play like 25, 26 minutes a game, and you saw Jordan McLaughlin play 22, 23. I mean, you said 16, 17 max, but, you know, D'Lo's versatile enough in terms of how he can impact the game offensively where you can play the two of them together. I mean, you have the greatest play of all time, the D'Lo McLaughlin UCLA cut. Just like cash money every single time. I was on the fence between McLaughlin and Anderson, and I ended up going with Anderson. But man, I mean, what's there not to like about J-Mac, dude? He's awesome.
Yeah. Going back to those playoff stats. So he played in five games. I'll give you the tale of the tape.
Let's
here.
Do it.
He played in five games.
Okay.
Both of the wins and three of the losses, obviously. He played 83 minutes. I think he started I don't think he played in the first game. Or he might have played in the first game and not the second. He was in and out of the rotation kind of at the start of the playoff series. So he played 83 minutes. He shot 12 of 17 from the floor. So 70.6%. Sure, he only shot 7 threes and made 4 of them, which it felt like more than... I think he might have hit 3 of them in one game.
Yeah, it definitely... Yeah.
He hit 4 free throws, 3 of 4 free throws, so didn't get to the line. Had 17 assists in his 83 minutes and two turnovers. So he had an 8.5 to 1 turnover ratio.
And it's like 8.5 assists per 36, too. And he's playing with bench guys, too, which is insane.
He had 5 steals, 5 personal fouls. He had the second highest plus-minus for the series, apart from Munro and Nkodi and Noel, who are all above
on a per
him,
game
they all
basis,
played one.
I mean.
One game, So D'Angelo Russell, Jaden McDaniels is the only player who was a positive for the series, which is pretty crazy. Plus 19.
Wow.
For the series,
okay,
McDaniels.
Jim. Mr. 10 of
and
23.
Then, yeah, and then surprisingly, probably to some and to me, the second and third on that list is D'Angelo Russell and Jordan McLaughlin at minus 4 for the series.
That doesn't surprise me.
And then it kind of, gets pretty nasty from there. It ends with Malik Beasley, who was minus 44 for the series. Yikes.
God bless him.
But yeah, I mean, that's a tangent, but McLaughlin is, I think, like the archetypical backup point guard who's really good, but you just have to watch him. If you don't watch him, you're just like, who's this 5'11" dude who's... can't really shoot that well, but when you do watch him, you understand why Chris Finch, a great NBA coach, adores him, because he does winning things kind of constantly, and I think he'll just be in the rotation all season because of it.
Yeah, dude. I don't know what else there is to say besides that dude is awesome.
Yeah. All right, so who do you think will underachieve? This was really hard for me. Who do you think will underachieve this season, or may underachieve?
Put the gun away. Stop waving it and pointing it at me. Please.
I'm nervous.
Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, I thought it might be. I teetered between probably 5 or 6 players in this, because anyone could. And Anthony Edwards is definitely one that was on that list.
For sure. And my thing with Ant is I think that playing at the level was such a good way of forcing those guys to be engaged defensively in D'Lo and Ant and McDaniels, really all the perimeter players. And Cat too. I've just got serious concerns about what might happen to some of his and D'Lo's defensive habits playing drop on the perimeter with Gobert there. I really don't want it to become this, Portland defense that we saw with Vanderpool, with those Blazers teams that made the playoffs, where it was just, instead of it kind of being more like, getting a guy to the elbow, right, and then making life really, really difficult for him there, it was more of just like a funneling him into the paint. And that's really not...
Funneling into Hassan Whiteside, was the guy who was... Or, Yusuf Nurkic, which isn't Gobert, but it's not the right way to play.
Right. I think you can steer guys into the right parts of the floor where the defense is more effective, right? Because then you can... then you can sag off the... You can sag off the slot there. You can... you can lift from the corner. All different types of things. But man, I'm just a little worried about what might happen to some of his defensive habits, a la Donovan Mitchell with Gobert back there. And so that's why I'm excited that a lot of Ant's minutes are going to be paired with Cat, because I think that they're going to be, according to Mike Anori, they're going to be playing up at the level more when Cat's in the game as the 5. So if they can do that, I think that'll be good. But again, this is more about the defensive side of the ball rather than the offensive side of the ball. Like, I think Ant's gonna get to that 25 points per game mark.
Well, that's what I was gonna ask: is how worried are you worried at all about kind of him disengaging when the inevitable kind of D'Lo Gobert pick and rolls or just Cat possessions where it's all kind of funneled towards Cat as a scorer? Like, can Ant stay effective, because he could be the best cutter in the league if he tried.
For sure.
Like, he's literally the most explosive athlete in the NBA, probably.
I think, will he? I'm a little worried about a sense of complacency. And again, it has nothing to do with Ant's personality, has nothing to do with his background, none of it. It's mainly just like, I think a lot of Timberwolves players expect that their offense is going to create so many mismatches that they're not going to have to collectively work as hard when they don't have the ball. Like, I have the same worry about Kat, too. Mm-hmm. Like, when that pick and roll action is going on, like, is Kat going to, you know, really trying to be fly around, cut off of that, cut from the corners,
play as an off-ball shooter, almost like a Malik Beasley if he was really tall.
Yeah, it's just guys doing stuff that they're not used to doing, right? Because we didn't see a whole lot of Kat and D'Lo pick and roll last year. We saw a good amount of D'Lo and Vando pick and roll, but the way that impacts the offensive game, I think, is just so much different. And there's going to be so many opportunities for Ant to go and take them via cutting or, you know, hunting space without the basketball, where I think Ant's still going to be very good. Again, I think Ant's going to probably average something in the neighborhood of like 25-5-5. But
I mean, when he has the ball, he's going to be really good, and he's going to have the ball a lot still. Like, he's Anthony Edwards. They all know that he's a perimeter threat as a player, and they will defer to him. But like, if you lose 10% of your offensive potential by not doing the right things off the ball, like you said, hunting space, I think, is just such a great phrase, because like, if Ant hunted space all game, that 25 would be 29.
And I think that's kind of where my underperforming, I guess, comes into play, is like, I think there's going to be so many games that we'll rewatch, right? Like, a lot of people now have Instat or whatever it is to be able to go back and watch like all the offensive actions of the game. And I have a feeling that I'm going to do that a lot and see a lot of clips where it's just like, Ant, like, dude.
Like, that was it. Just move into that space, right, or, there.
Cut harder. It's just easy points ready for the taking, where he could have 24 points, but okay, he should have had 32 or 33. Things like that, I guess. Where maybe the stats might not reflect them necessarily. Like, 24 points still looks great in a box score, but but just contextualizing it with missed opportunities, I guess. Again, still incredibly high on Anthony Edwards as a basketball player. I think he already is one of the top seven guys you'd most want to have in a playoff series at 21 years old, which is absolutely insane. I mean, he was one of the best five or six players in the entire playoffs last year. Like, is that an outrageous statement? Maybe seven?
No, I don't think
It's insane. So, great player, incredible guy. It's just it has more to do with, like, over the course of the regular season than the playoffs. I'm not concerned about the playoffs at all. Like, I think he's locked in.
No, I think he'll probably start to do those things in the playoffs, because it's a lot easier to do it against the Clippers in a second round than it is against Sacramento in January.
And I think what's tough too, and we were talking about this before we went live, is like, the Timberwolves have the easiest first 10 games of their schedule in the entire league, and it's not even really close. Sometimes you just worry, like, okay, we're 8-0, so this must be doing this must be okay.
Yeah, and he's so young that that's a thing that takes, it probably takes starting 8-0 and then losing in the first round, to really give you the grounding that you need to be like, all right, like, we were cruising when we shouldn't have been cruising, and it cost us. So, I mean, it's one of those things that maybe it takes time to realize those things, and you can't just do it from day one. Let's take a quick break, another quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll do some. I'll give you my the guy I'm worried about after this break, and then we will do some projections, some actual win total projections. All right. Moving on to the guy I'm worried about. Again, I found this really hard. I don't know if that is, like, you know, unbridled optimism, because normally I don't find it that hard to nitpick a Timberwolves roster. But, and again, put your gun away now, because it seems like revenge. But I think it's Jalen Noel, and I don't. And again, it's not. It's more of a context thing, because I think Jalen Noel is going to have a really good season. I do believe that he will take that microwave scorer, you know, sixth man or seventh man role and cement himself in it. But I think if I'm looking, if I'm kind of pushing the fence for weak links, then his is the one that stands out to me as the most fragile, even if it doesn't end up bending or breaking. It just seems like the one that is most likely to, purely because he's never been in that role for 80 games or for 30 games in his career. And his game is so geared towards like this isolation kind of, you know, almost street ball type setup that I'm unsure whether for long periods, for playoff series, for big games against, you know, the Suns in late April, where they might be the first seed and the Wolves might be the second seed. Like, those games, does Jalen Noel have the discipline? Does he have the defense? Does he have the playmaking? Does he have the actual size, you know, on the floor to be a guy who can play 20 minutes a night? And maybe that just means he's only a... Maybe that just means he's only a guy who plays 14 minutes a night in those games, and you give the other minutes to Anthony Edwards or to D'Lo or Jaden McDaniels, and that would be fine, because those guys are really good players, and that still means that Noel is, you know, contributing to the roster. But like I said, if I was pushing my money into one side of the pot, it would be that Jalen Noel will succeed, but I can see the other side where he doesn't. And I also don't think that Chris Finch, although he has spent the entire summer blowing smoke up Noel's ass, like, I don't know that.
Pause. That was before the Go. That was before the Gobert trade.
Right. Well, that's what I don't think. I think,
and that was almost
shows
more
us
out
that
of,
he doesn't trust him.
That was almost like, you could take it a few different ways, but you could almost say that was out of necessity. Because after the Gobert trade, who was on the roster? Like, he was basically saying, you know, this guy's had a great preseason. Or not preseason, just like off-season working out, which is great. But, like, what's crazy is that it didn't feel like this last season at all, but Jalen Noel played more minutes than Jordan McLaughlin did. They played in the exact same...
He had long stretches in the rotation.
They played in the exact same amount of number of games, 62. Noel averaged 15.7 minutes a game, and McLaughlin averaged 14.5. So,
but then Noel played 11 minutes in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. I think that Chris Finch will start the season with as much trust as he can put into Jalen Noel, and all the hope in the world that Jalen Noel becomes consistently what we believe he can be, which is that scorer off the bench. But I also think that it's a flimsy kind of, you know, balance board there of trust between the two, and that at any point, Austin Rivers, if Jalen Noel is a reason why Minnesota are giving up 6 extra points a night off the bench, or the shot isn't there, I think he will say Austin Rivers take his place in the rotation. I don't think Finch has ever had the trust in Noel like he does with some of the other younger guys, and maybe that's warranted, but I'm worried, because I do want Noel to be in, I want him to succeed in that role,
right.
But I'm worried that a bad stretch of games, he won't have the same,
and I think that's totally,
tickets. He doesn't have those tickets in the bank that other guys do.
I think that's totally fair. That's a great way of putting it, in that, like, too, with Noel, I mean, with Jalen, I think, too, he's just so much more than a scorer offensively. Like, yeah, he only averaged 2.1 assists a game, but for a guy who, you know, is an on-the-ball creation guy, you know, he does such a good job of making the right read when he has the ball. And that's just something that you so rarely see for a guy to do that consistently well, that young, you know? And
he's a guy who's had the ball in his hands his whole life, and he really, I think that's striking when you watch him play, and that does mean playmaking. It's not high level playmaking, but like dump off passes, kicks to the corner, you know, reading the help defense. He is good at that, and that kind of allows him to be a pick-and-roll threat, not just as a scorer.
Yeah, and, like, Jalen Nowell, again, this is per cleaning the glass, his first 3 years in the league, here are the percentiles that he ranked in terms of turnover percentage. So amount of possessions where he's, you know, using the ball and turns it over.
Keeping in mind that he has the ball a lot when he's on the floor.
Correct. 4.9% is first year. That was in the 100th percentile among guards or combos. 87th percentile year two, and last year 94th percentile. He turned it over less than 7% of the time that he actively used the ball in a possession, which is incredible. And then when you look at too, like, you look at his assist to usage, so, you know, his assist rate to his usage rate, so basically how often did a guy get assists relative to, you know, him being used offensively, was in the 54th percentile, which basically means, like, this guy was more of a bucket getter than a playmaker, but, you know, still graded out pretty average in terms of being able to stay balanced to those two, even though we've always seen him as this go get a bucket guy, which is great. Like, he was in the 92nd percentile last year in terms of points per 100 shot attempts when you include free throws, three-pointers, two-pointers, the whole shebang, which is great. He's just a super efficient offensive player, both as a playmaker and as a scorer. It's not just as a scorer. And I think that if he can play the team concept defensively well enough, like, yeah, that's what it's going to come down to. And the thing with Jalen is he knows that that's what it's going to come down to. He has no concern about his offensive abilities or how he'll fit here or any of that. Like, I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a really important guy to play alongside Gobert. He's not going to be a high wall concept guy in the sense that, you know, he's not flying around all the time everywhere. You know, he went to Washington, you know, where they play that zone all the time, that really aggressive trapping zone, but that's just not great in terms of, like, getting acclimated to a zone or to a drop concept. And I'm really interested to see how he guards guys in the corners and drop, to see, like, can he lift out of the corner when he's supposed to? Like, can he help and tag when he needs to? I know that Mike and Nori said, you know, Dane asked a great question on Thursday about that. Nori said that, you know, they're going to try to tag a little bit less and just focus on containing the ball and not needing to have so much rotation and help with guys dying on ball screens. And so if Noel can,
and I think that's his biggest problem, dying on ball screens. Yeah, so it's not effort. It's certainly not effort. Like you said, he knows that he needs to play good defense, so he tries. But it's hard, man. He's like 6'3". He's not, you know, he'd be what, 220 pounds?
No. Like one, not like even 190.
Well, there you go. That's kind of, you know, cement, you know, hammers home that point even more, is that, like, it's just hard physically to compete when he has to guard two guards. He doesn't get to guard 200 point guards like Jordan McLaughlin, 200 pounds. So he doesn't get to guard point guards like McLaughlin does. He doesn't have the twitch hands and stuff like McLaughlin. He has to play defense upright and try and, you know, stay in front of guys. And that's just physically hard.
Yeah.
And it's an issue, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be really interested to see, like, if we see lineups where we have Noel out there, right, as a bench lineup, and McLaughlin's your point guard, right? So McLaughlin's going to be the guy that's going to be, I guess, at the point of attack a little bit more, at least in ball screen actions. Like, could you go out there with Anderson, McDaniels, and Kat and try and stick Noel on, like, an undersized four or a three in the corner? And have him try and develop those off the ball
skills. Almost D-Lo him from last season. Just hide him on the least likely guy to kill you.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to me in terms of trying to minimize the potential, you know, I don't know, bleeding. Like the downfall. The defense. Sorry, I'm at a loss for words right now.
Well, you start getting a bit flustered when you talk about Jalen.
Oh my God, I know, man. yeah, I mean, if he can play that off the ball role, kind of in the corner role, well, no one to lift, no one to sink, no one to tag. those types of things. I think that'll be important. Because, again, like, he played off the ball a lot in that zone at Washington, and you'd think that that would be a little bit of an easier role for him in terms of being able to rely on some of the, you know, some of the defensive skills.
The less physical stuff as well.
For sure. And he said, like,
less being bullied.
And he said he played, like, the first 20 minutes of all of his workouts. He said he worked out every single day this summer, and he said the first 20 minutes of every single workout on the court was defense. They'd roll the ball out, he'd guard whoever, bunch of different situational stuff. So yeah, I think that's a good answer in terms of, like, there's a world in which he, like, starts out playing 23, 24 minutes a game and is out of the rotation in April or March.
Yeah. And I hope that doesn't, and I hope it doesn't happen also because if you're theoretically, I don't think we'll see a lot of five-man bench lineups, but theoretically you've got Jordan McLaughlin, Noel, Taurean Prince, Kyle Anderson, and say one of Gobert or Towns. You need that bucket getter
for sure
out there.
Like, and especially someone that efficient.
You don't want McLaughlin having to score 12 points a night. You don't want Kyle Anderson or Taurean Prince having to handle the ball for 90% of the possessions that you're looking to get perimeter scoring from. So, I mean, if he can develop a good relationship with Gobert as a pick and roll partner, that would be really handy because that's just another feather in his cap for a reason why he should be on the floor. Gobert, like, I mean, I'll go back to it once more. He's fucking huge, dude. Like, Noel will love his screens. Noel in the mid-range coming off one dribble pull-ups from Gobert's, you know, high screens, that's money, and that will happen.
And he's better than Conley or Donovan Mitchell in the mid-range.
Yeah, Jordan Clarkson is a guy that, like, there is a world where we're talking about this world where Noel falls out of the rotation. There's a world where he's Jordan Clarkson. And that world is, you know, one with, like, spaceships and like, floating trains.
Is he dating,
like,
Kendall Jenner in that world?
If he wants, she would be lucky.
That was,
to date
that was
him.
Jordan Clarkson at one point in time, I think.
Like,
I
that's
think.
In the most imagined, you know, successful world, Noel, like, for the Timberwolves, that is, Noel is, like, a sixth man of the year candidate because he's so good at scoring the ball and he can survive defensively and survive as a playmaker. And that's a possibility as well, but there is a possibility, like you said, that he's out of the rotation in January.
Do you think that there's a world in which he is the third leading scorer on the team? Where he scores more than D'Lo?
Oh.
High end?
Maybe. I mean,
where D'Lo
maybe,
is just, like, averaging 10 assists.
I think he'd have to. Yeah, but I also think that just because the way D'Lo is wired, it would have to be also because D'Lo's shooting 40% from the field.
That's
or 39% from the field.
I think he's going to average,
you know,
more
if
points.
If D'Lo's having a bad season.
I think Noel's going to average more points a game than Gobert.
I think Gobert will be the third leading scorer on the team.
Wow.
I think Gobert will probably average.
Holy
yeah, I think
shit.
Gobert will probably
wow.
have
okay.
career high.
That's a take.
Career high points.
I like
yeah,
it.
Maybe, like, I don't know what his career high is. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm looking at maybe, like, 17 to 18. Something like that. Because I just think that almost, especially early, I feel like it's going to be like this new kid on the block, you know, like, just give the ball to Gobert. Like, whoa, this is fun. Like, this guy's huge and he catches everything and he puts everything back. There's a lot of mid-range, you know, there's a lot of guys who shoot jumpers that don't go in, Anthony Edwards and D'Lo. That sounds harsh, but I just mean they are jump shooters and jump shots inevitably miss, you know, more than 50% of the time usually. So, like, Gobert, you pointed this out again when you were writing about him and tweeting about him at Eurobasket. Like, he hoovers everything up around the rim. It is, like, he's going to get so many putbacks that everyone's going to be looking. D'Lo's going to be looking for him because he's going to be so excited to have this lob threat again. I think Ant will look for him because he's new and, you know, Ant loves a new shiny toy. I think Kat will enjoy playing with him because he's never had a big like him before. I just think, especially early, I could see Gobert averaging like 20 a game for the first month and a half, you know, and then dropping back off to 14 or 15 a game.
So, what do you think his career average is in points? 611 games, 9 years.
I think accounting for probably one or two seasons early where he was finding his feet, maybe 14, 13.
12.4. Career
yeah.
high.
But what has it been the last two seasons, say? Is it 15 or so?
Or so. about 15.
I think you can tack 2 points onto that per game, and I would feel comfortable with that. 17
is the most he's ever scored, is 15.9, and that was in 2018-19, the year before he made the All-Star team for the first time.
Yeah, I'm sticking with my take. I think I'm probably going to be proven wrong.
I like it.
But I only think I'll be proven wrong because D'Lo will just shoot more than Gobert will. You know what I mean? Gobert just won't.
Like, if Ant and Cat drive and they have to send two guys at whoever's driving, or shit McDaniels, like, Gobert's just...
If Ant finishes at the rim like he finished last season, Gobert's going to get 4 putbacks a game from Ant.
Yeah. Agreed.
You know what I mean? That's 8 points, and he's going to score 12 points on shots that are just, he didn't even want. You know what I mean? They're just going to fall into his lap. Like, I think that this team is kind of built to maximize Gobert offensively.
I agree.
And that sounds
totally
weird because they have more options to score, but I don't know. I just have this feeling that, yeah, like the first month, maybe, let's say the first 15 games, Gobert's going to average like 20 and 15. And then he'll just go, and then he'll fade back into, you know, his normal 14 to 15 a game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also just like a sidebar. This can be another conversation later, but just super excited to see what he looks like. Like, as an offensive hub, playing at the elbows, and as a passer, and the way that can activate everybody else. I'm really like, Finch seems very invested in trying to grow that part of his game, and Rudy kind of subtly made it seem like Utah, like, that wasn't allowed.
But he also can't dribble the basketball. Like, and I'm talking about, like, 2 dribbles is an adventure.
But even then, you don't have to dribble if you're at the elbow.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, if he's standing at the elbow and the offense is revolving around him, cutters, handoff partners, you know, shooters, flare screens from Towns for D'Lo in the opposite corner, like, that's when I think that Gobert as a hub could work, because they're not high-level reads or dribbling the ball. That's just almost standing there and letting, like the sun, you know, like the world is revolving around him, and he just needs to make the right play, which is probably a pretty simple play, but he just needs to do it at the right time.
For sure.
That could be exciting.
Yeah. Should we,
give me your season, give me a season win, you know, well, because you mentioned points before, who's going to score the most points per game, Ant or Cat? I'm guessing they're the 2 options.
Cat. I think Cat will.
Cat?
I think Cat's going to average 28 a game.
I think Ant probably will, just because he'll just shoot more. Dude, you know, like, I think he's less likely to take a backseat than Cat.
I think, like, again, like, I've ridden with Cat for years and years and years, but, like, I think, like, Ant being that good in the playoffs almost legitimately underrated Cat, in the sense that, like, Cat had to work so hard for his points that now, like,
Cat's first game or two, like the play-in plus game one of the playoffs, I think everyone was just like, all right, well, Cat's not playing well. You know, it didn't really matter what he did after that.
He
wasn't going to get the respect he deserved.
Did
he average like 22 and 10, I think?
I feel like in the playoffs last year, the first playoff game, Cat was fucking good. Cat had 29 and 13 in the first playoff game.
Yeah, so it was the second playoff game that he might have had like 7 or something.
It was the third game. It was the one where they did a big comeback. He had 8. He had 5 fouls.
Yeah.
That was the one.
No, I mean, I can, if someone chose Cat or chose Ant for that question, that I wouldn't, you know, argue with them.
I trust the consistency and the sample size with Cat. I mean, he's just a monster. But should we get into season long?
Yeah, so how many wins will the Timberwolves have? What seed will they, you know, finish? And where will they finish the playoffs? Where will they get kicked out of the playoffs, if they get kicked out at all?
Wow, okay, that's a place to end that sentence. Throw at the end there. All right, so wins. I think the Timberwolves are going to win 58 games.
You, when I told you mine, you acted like I was crazy high, and then you topped it.
Yeah, dude, I didn't want to put up, you know, I put up some false appearances there, like, so for reference. All right, 58 I don't think is outrageous. All right, like, Utah won 52 a couple years ago. Memphis won 56 games last year, and Ja Morant missed 30 games or something absurd like that. Like,
man, they were ridiculously good. That was
like, their roster is
weirdly
that
good.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is going to be a hungry team. I think this roster is just as good as the, if not better than Phoenix's roster from last year. And Phoenix won 64 games. And I think the Timberwolves are uniquely positioned in a sense of like, if there's a night where they don't have Ant, or there's a night where they don't have Cat, D'Lo, Ant, and Gobert, or D'Lo, Cat, and Gobert, like that's still a really, really strong, you know, nucleus of guys.
And if you get 20 from Noel, for sure.
And the Timberwolves just have such a competent team. They'll have such a competent team 1 through 15. Whereas, you know, in years past, like the sky is falling if guys 12 through 15 have to enter the game for any reason.
Yeah.
You know, like PJ Dozier could be the 15th guy on the team, and he's been a rotation guy in Denver the last 2 years. And Nikola Jokic said that they really missed him in the playoffs last year.
I love Dozier.
So, you know, most years 58 is the best record in the league. I do think that the Wolves will be the number one seed in the Western Conference, in large part because they have a candy ass schedule. The Timberwolves have, like we've said, the easiest first 10 games of the season. Then games 20 through 30 or 20 through 29 is also the easiest portion of the schedule, league wide, at least like on paper to start the season. And then again, you look at games 41 through 50, also the easiest, right? And the worst part of the schedule that they have is games 31 through 40, which is the hardest strength of schedule in the league. But then,
and that's right in the sludge of the season, you know, when teams are still trying, but everyone's kind of
checked out. So, you'd hope that talent would win. And again, this is based on taking every team's, season win prop from DraftKings on the day the schedule came out, and extrapolating that to become a win percentage, and then averaging it out. With them having the on ramp that they do, they're going to get stuff figured out pretty quickly, I think, playing against some of these really bad tanking teams. And not only that, but their starters won't really have to work all that hard, in the sense that, you know, in some of these games, like their starters might not even sniff the court in the fourth quarter. So they'll,
and you know how you want, and if you want to get your bench clicking early, you know how you get them clicking, and that's by them getting 23 minutes a night because you're winning by 30 in the first quarter.
100%.
If you want to get McLaughlin and Torian Prince and Kyle Anderson acclimated and playing good basketball, they might get that done the first 10 games.
100%. And then, too, like, when you think about the fact that, like, when you think about the fact that the Timberwolves have such a favorable back-to-back schedule, it's insane. So the Timberwolves play teams on the back end of a back-to-back 15 times this season, like when it's their opponent's back end, and that includes 3 times against Denver alone. And they play teams on the front end 10 times. And those back end games, 8 of those 15 are at Target Center too, which is pretty interesting to think about. And then just getting into it more, like, you know, the Timberwolves too, like they play better teams on the back end. Like those 15 back end games, those average win percentage of those teams is 52%. And the average win percentage of the teams on the front end is like 49%. So, you know, it's really interesting to think about just how lucky this Wolves team gets with the schedule. It's backloaded, which is what you'd want for a team that needs some time to figure it out. New pieces, learning how to play with one another. And it's just going to be really, really interesting to see how this plays out, because I think that the deck is stacked pretty perfectly for the Wolves to be right up there at the end of the season as the number one team in the West. And, you know, I think because of that, you know, they'll probably play somebody like Portland or, maybe a Denver if Denver slips or has some health issues, or
New Orleans.
No, I think New Orleans is going to be like fourth or fifth in the West. But then
Dallas.
Yeah, like Dallas, for instance, like being able to play Dallas, I think, in the first round or something like that, or Memphis, if Memphis slips. And then I think, again, they'd be more talented than whoever they would play in the second round. Again, if you're the first seed, and ultimately, I think they're going to lose to the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. And I think that we'll all be singing Kumbaya, that, you know, we lost to, you know, the greatest modern basketball dynasty, I guess, the last like 10, 15 years. And start talking about the finals this time next year.
Happy days. Here I was thinking I was going to be overly optimistic and feel like, you know, that I'd taken it a step too far. And now I feel the opposite. I feel like maybe I'm not optimistic enough, because I won't go as deep into the weeds, because I think everything you said there is spot on and I agree with it all. I think they'll win 56 games. I think they'll probably come, I think they'll be the Memphis of this year, the second seed, team that surprises, team that maybe a lot of people think how they win 56 games. I think that the Clippers will probably be the one seed. I've got faith in the Clippers' health, which is probably fraught with danger, but I think the Clippers will probably be the one seed with, you know, 60 to 65 wins. And I think that the Wolves will, again, same as you, I think they'll get a favorable matchup in round one. I think they'll prove everyone wrong in round two, which is where all the pressure will be, because I think most people will be expecting them at that point to win a series. Gobert, Towns, D'Lo will win in the second round, and there'll be a lot of receipts being pulled up on Twitter from the Wolves fans. And then I think they'll lose in the Western Conference, probably comprehensively as well, if I had to just guess. I think that the Clippers or the Warriors or even Denver, who I have a lot of faith in as well.
I don't.
Might just wax them.
Although that's just like retribution for them stealing Bruce Brown. Bruce Brown, like, might be my favorite player in the NBA. I love that dude.
It's just the petty Bruce Brown take.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I love the Warriors. I love the Clippers. I think the Clippers team is going to be a team that load manages quite a bit in the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, the Suns are going to be really good as well. Like, they're not going to... I know they had some dramas in the offseason.
I don't know about that.
I don't think they're going to lose 20 more games. You know, they might lose 10 more games, and then they're still a 54-win team. 54. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, they can have a huge drop off and still be the three seed. Like, that's how good they were last season.
Yeah, but I mean, they just don't have that fire anymore, though. Like, they're gonna trade Jay Crowder here any minute. Like, that's a big loss.
Chris Paul is senile.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, he's stayed healthy and.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be. I'll be banking on Kawhi to stay healthy over Chris Paul.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Clippers are going to be conservative. Like, I think the Clippers are going to be, like, I think the Clippers wanted to play everybody. Clippers would be the runaway number one seed. And yeah, they were healthy.
65 wins.
I think they could win like 66, 67 games.
Yeah.
Just because that team is insanely deep. But again, it comes down to, like, if the Wolves will be able to dominate with two bigs. There's nobody that has anything for that.
Yeah, and they might get... I think they could... It is still a possibility that they win 56 games and get run off the floor in the playoffs just because it just doesn't work as well. But, like, I don't know, man. I'm the opposite. I guess I'm glass half full. Like, I have to see it not work to believe that it won't work rather than thinking it won't work.
That's fair.
And having to see that it will work. They just have a lot of really good players, and they already were good last season, and now they got the best defender in the league, or rim defender.
They're the...
And, like, an offensive machine. The way I just, from watching it, he is just, like, he's not the machine, he's, like, the gears of the machine, you know?
Yeah.
Like, everything worked in Utah because of Rudy. I would have loved to see them keep Donovan Mitchell to get that good, that comparison of how much Rudy bring to that team. We won't see it now because the whole team's gone to shit, but, you know, like, I think that he was really the straw that stirs the drink, when, like, we were talking about before. Rudy will be that this season, and he'll just be huge. This team's gonna win a shitload of games. It's gonna be so good.
Yeah, and I think just, like, they're so much better offensively in terms of individual talent than Utah was.
Yeah.
Like, if Donovan Mitchell had a bad game, they were screwed.
I mean, it's like Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, if you had Carl Anthony Towns on that team. Like, I don't think Anthony Edwards is as good as Donovan Mitchell at the moment, not on an every night basis, but
and
like...
the playoffs, I mean...
Yeah, but there's also Carl Anthony Towns there. That's the difference. The difference is that Carl Anthony Towns is better than both of them.
Top 15 you know dude I mean? In the league. Like, he's a bad dude. Yeah,
like... I don't know,
they're
man.
They're the only team in the league that has three top 25 players.
Yeah. And even if you think they're debatable, which I think Kat was probably, you know, too close to one, and Ant was probably too close to one, but, like, even if they're top 35 players, you know, like, if you push them both out to their absolute limit of where they could be placed...
Yeah.
There's still no one else has that.
Yeah.
And Chris Finch is a great coach. Chris Finch is why the reason why people think that the Wolves will win 48 games. Because people don't realize that Chris Finch is one of the best coaches in the league. And maybe he won't, you know, maybe he'll prove that he isn't. But again, I need to be proven otherwise. Because last season, well, he definitely was.
I just think, like, there's so much, I mean, in like, plugging the article that I just wrote, too, like, about Chris Plug Finch away. And, like, being the reason that the Wolves are in this position is, like, he has so much, all the players get it and they respect it. Like, you got someone like Kyle Anderson who took notice of, like, okay, Chris Finch is super legit because I see how his guys play.
Mm-hmm.
Connected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hard for one another. Unselfish. Free-flowing. That type of thing. It's like, I don't think Finch is going to be the reason why they don't get somewhere in the playoffs.
I think more likely he'd be the reason why they than the reason why they didn't.
Completely agree.
All right, well, that will wrap up the Howls and Growls podcast. Again, change of name, same stuff, you heard it. So good to be back, Jack. So good to spend, you know, an hour and a half talking hoops with you. And, I mean, I'd love to do this almost, you know, every weekend if we can, or every weekend that you're free. I know you're a busy man.
I'm going on tour here in October, but you know, I'm always down. So it's great to see you. Great to see your smiling face. It's been such a long time.
It's been far too long. Wolves back. We're back. Happy days.
Yes, man. Absolutely. Can't wait to get back.